You may be seated. Our next case is 13-1982, Dayton Bar Association versus John Joseph Scacia?
Scacia.
Scacia. Mr. Williamson?
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is David Williamson. I'm the attorney for the respondent, attorney John Scacia. The matter comes before this court really as a combination of two different cases brought by the Dayton Bar Association against Mr. Scacia, one filed in 2012 and one in 13. Upon my motion and the assent of the relator, the cases were consolidated, although two separate hearings were held by the Board of Commissioners. However, there is but one report from the board for this court's review, which addresses both cases. Both cases involve three clients, or I should really say the first case involves a group of clients that are collectively referred to in the report as the Mound clients. The other two clients are a woman by the name of Ms. Greider and a gentleman by the name of Mr. Willis. A variety of charges were brought. The board's finding and report to the court resulted in the acceptance of violations in some instances and the rejection of others. I would suggest to the court that the gist of the findings by the board were less about Mr. Scacia's service to his clients and more about his shortcomings over the handling of his client's money and the maintenance of his client and bank records. The one finding of with regard to service to the clients was a failure to act competently concerning missing a filing deadline by one business day in federal court in Dayton. The panel found the following aggravating factors: a pattern of misconduct, multiple offenses, and a refusal to acknowledge the wrongful nature of his conduct. We cannot argue with the finding of the pattern and the multiplicity of offenses, although we would suggest to the court with regards to the multiplicity of offenses, I suppose when you get past two to three, it becomes multiple. But there is a difference between three and 23 or 83. And indeed, the same holds true for a pattern. We do take issue with the panel's finding of a refusal to acknowledge. Mr. Scacia spent the first 17 years of his career outside the private practice as a government lawyer and distinguished himself as a prosecuting attorney with the city of Dayton. Eventually, the city leaders there promoted him to chief prosecutor and then eventually to head of the city's law department. Now, during this time, Mr. Scacia did not receive guidance or mentorship regarding how to operate the private practice of a law firm. When he did go into private practice and left the city, it was with an experienced and established law firm that had processes and procedures already in place for the handling of client funds and the maintenance of records. When he went into solo practice following his time with the Brannan firm, these cases then reflect his fundamental misunderstanding of the then disciplinary and now professional rules of conduct concerning these matters. As the panel's and board's report to this court points out, Mr. Scacia did acknowledge his actions. He did stipulate to all pertinent exhibits. He admitted to failing to place client fees into a trust account. And his explanations reflect, again, this misunderstanding that the fees were already earned upon receipt if he had already performed certain work. This is wrong. It's not what the rule says. He gets that now. He acknowledges the wrongfulness.
Counsel, how long was he in private practice before these activities occurred that gave rise?
The He left the city in 2000 to go in with the private firm. The complaint was filed while he was a member of that firm in 04. These issues arose the same year that he left private practice, went into solo practice.
So it was March of 2004. He did a solo practice.
Correct.
And that's when...
And he took the Mound clients with him into his solo practice.
Okay. And the grievances are since March of 2004.
Correct.
All right.
The most recent two came up in 10 and 11.
All right, so he's been in private practice for 6-plus years or more. Well, more if you want to count the Brennan. There are numerous CLEs about law office management, how to manage your IOLDA accounts. The information out there for the solo practitioner to address all of the issues that you say your client was ill-informed of or didn't know about, that burden is on him to educate himself on law office management and the responsibilities of the Code of Professional Conduct, is it not?
You'll find no argument from me in that regard, Your Honor.
And then we're going to go back to the old adage, ignorance of the law is no excuse.
You're absolutely correct. Ignorance of the law is no excuse.
And
however,
so your client agrees that he did all of these things, these irregularities, the IOLTA, et cetera, and we're here arguing on whether or not he should be suspended for 6 months.
Correct. All of that is correct.
Okay.
Is there restitution owed in this case to any party?
Restitution in the Mound cases was tendered by Mr. Scacia. It was not in the Willis case where the panel found that the fees were earned and were clearly not excessive. In the Grider case, it has not been awaiting further action by this court. So,
I don't understand waiting further action by our court. In what respect?
Well, with respect to the Grider matter concerned the transfer of a fee, of a flat fee, from the client to the attorney. The issue there was the fact that the fee agreement contained the word non-refundable without the language that in notifying the client that it should have, that she would have been entitled to a refund. And so there was not necessarily an issue of whether or not the
fee
had
been earned.
You want
us to make a determination on that?
No. I'm not asking this court to make a determination with regard to the substantive findings of the violations by the panel. As Justice O'Connor has said, I'm merely in front of this court with my objections to the recommended sanction by the panel.
Why don't you address why your client should not be subjected to 1 year suspension with 6 months stayed?
For a variety of reasons, but first of all, as I point out in my objections, that this court has already seen that in other cases similar to this one, that Columbus Bar Association versus Watson, the presence of the aggravating factors of a multiplicity of offenses in a pattern are the same as in this case, three clients. Mr. Watson's full 1 year suspension was stayed with
conditions.
When
you say three clients, were the Mound clients? There were multiple clients there.
Multiple clients with regards to Mound, but they were treated as
well. It was one case. It was one case, but how many clients were involved in that one case?
I believe there were 37.
37, okay.
But there weren't 37 individual violations.
I understand that, but the dollars belong to all 37.
And that really was the gist of the problem, was in not separately identifying those funds. And that's why they were dealt with collectively as well by the panel.
Counsel, you referred to essentially bad management. He can't account, you know, it was just bad accounting. But don't we have about $17,000 that's just missing?
With regard to the Mound cases, there's about that amount that is unaccounted for.
Isn't that a bigger problem than just not good accounting practices? We've got money that's just missing.
Well, the testimony at the hearing before the panel was that there were, because of the complexity and the size of this case, with this many clients, the number of depositions, the motions, that sort of thing, that there were expenses that were incurred. What my client was unable to do, due to his bad record keeping and management of his own records, was to come up with the receipts for all of those costs.
He testified. So the $21,875 has not been reimbursed to those clients, or it had?
No,
I thought you told me it was done.
There was a reimbursement that was made.
Was it of the $21,000?
It was of $300 per client, and then an additional amount to one of the clients. Not all of the clients had given him the same amount of money, which was for costs and expenses of suit, which he...
So there has not been an accounting of the $21,000?
Correct. And that's one of the violations that this that the panel found.
And he has, to date, not done it?
He's attempted to do it, but he has not been able to do that, despite...
Well, he would know that he got so much money, and he would know the source of it, and he's asking for some leniency from our court having taken care of that obligation?
Well, Your Honor, he has attempted to take care of the obligation. What he's not able to do is to present to the panel or to this court exactly where the expenses were as far as the ones that he testified to. He talked about what he did spend, but he's unable to come up with any receipts in that regard.
Okay. And what about the $2,000 to Ms. Greider? That's still outstanding, correct?
It is.
He hasn't reimbursed her on this flat fee arrangement, and he admits that the language of his fee agreement violated what should have been contained therein.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why has he not come before us with kind of a clean slate when it comes to the money owed? I mean, that's what we see here routinely.
Your Honor, I understand that. Where we sit with regards to that particular matter is that we're in a position, that was a fee that was earned in order to get his house in order, which is what we're asking for. He is willing to do that. He has not come before this court today because, again, of the multiplicity of these various cases, and we're trying to get some direction in that regard. And what I'm asking the court to do is to give him the opportunity to do that, and that is to issue the suspension, stay the entire year with conditions, as you did in the Watson case, as you did in the Royer case, and allow him to set his house in order. This is someone who, given the mitigating factors that the panel noticed and recognized, 31 years in the practice of law in this state with no prior disciplinary record, and
well, he would not have had these type of problems when he was in public service, so that's
correct.
Not really a feather in his cap. It's he didn't have access to clients' monies while he was in the city department.
You're correct. Nor would I would suggest, Your Honor, I come from and have been fortunate enough to be associated in a law firm of a large law firm by Dayton standards, 24 lawyers, and I have a full-time office manager, a bookkeeping department. That doesn't mean, as you suggest, that relieves me of my responsibilities under the professional rules of conduct, but it does make it easier because when a client hands me a check, I hand it to my staff and it gets taken care of. Now, I have to oversee them to make sure that they're complying because staff's compliance is my compliance, but I would suggest to the court that for solo practitioners in this state that there is a heightened challenge when you're also not only practicing law, but you're handling the money, you're paying the bills, you're doing all of these things, and I understand that the resources that are available, But what I'm asking the court is to recognize that with regards to sanctions against someone like my client, that that be taken into consideration as a mitigating factor.
But counsel, even in law school, attorneys are told that handling clients' money, mishandling of clients' money, can lead to suspension of a license. And that's a fundamental statement that's made to every law student, is it not?
It is, Your Honor, and I would ask you to recognize the difference between someone who mishandles clients' money 2 years out of law school and someone who, after a long and distinguished career, again, with no prior disciplinary record, and I should point out that the panel made pains to find that there was no dishonest or selfish motive in this part, which I would suggest makes this case very similar to the Royer case, where the problem was office management and record keeping. And so do we, and again, I would suggest this court sits almost like a sentencing court as the licensing body for we attorneys. You've got a recommendation from the panel, and now your job is to determine what is the appropriate sanction.
Counsel, I guess I'd like to follow Justice O'Donnell's question, and I've read the report, and I'm still not clear. On the Mound case, the $21,000 obviously was to cover costs and whatever for that case. I saw there was some copying costs of $3,500 to go to the United States Supreme Court. Do I have that right?
Correct.
Is it your position today that we are not dealing with missing funds, but we're dealing with not accounted for funds?
That is,
for example,
position.
Does your client claim that no money is owed to clients, or that some money is owed?
He has paid to each of the clients in the Mound case an amount of money.
I saw the $300.
Correct.
Was that per couple or per client?
Your Honor, I don't recall.
Okay, it's unimportant.
Okay. But the reason he made that uniform is because he was unable, because he could not go back and recreate from his poor records how much each client had given him. So that some had actually, probably with $300, received more than they had originally given him. Some might have only given him $250.
So was it your position before the panel, and is it your position today, that money is or is not owed to clients from the $21,000?
Is not.
Okay.
Okay.
Counsel, what about the fact that he missed the deadline on this particular case? Where is that case now? In the federal system?
That case is long since over, Your Honor. That is the Mound case that we're talking about.
I understand that. So with the Mound case, he misses the filing deadline, it gets dismissed, correct? And then he appeals that.
Correct.
And he loses in the circuit court. And then because he's missed a deadline, he's going to prepare a case to take to the United States Supreme Court.
On the issue of the dismissal.
Yes, because of the fact that he missed the filing deadline.
Your Honor, and if I can, what happened in that particular case is that Judge Rose had granted an extension of time. The motion that Mr. Skaysha filed for the extension of time to file the pleading, and in that particular court, the extensions are in 20-day blocks. Mr. Skaysha's problem was when he in his motion, he asked for 20 days or until November 25. Didn't realize November 25 was Thanksgiving Day. Judge Rose recognized that, and when he issued the order granting the extension, he specifically said on the order, November 24. So when the order granting the extension came, it was missed. Mr. Skaysha and his staff saw that the motion had been granted. Mr. Skaysha saw then, as he was getting ready to file, the 25th is Thanksgiving. That means my filing is the next day, which is when he filed, on the 26th, which was Friday. Well, he'd missed it. He had not read the entry that had said, no, you don't have 20 days, you have 19.
So, all right, it's not really important to get into the merits of how he would take then an appeal to the circuit court or to the United States Supreme Court on a missed deadline that he precipitated.
Correct.
All right. You've used your time.
Thank you.
Mr. Weaver.
May it please the court. This case arose when George Nofsinger, who was the lead plaintiff in the Mound case, filed a complaint with the Dayton Bar, with the disciplinary council, which was referred to the Dayton Bar. That was in late 2010. The facts of the case go back to when Mr. Skachel left the Brandon Law Office on March 1st of 2004. At that time, he took the $21,875 in expense money that had been provided by the 49 Mound clients to the Brandon Law Office. There is in evidence a list of those clients and how much they paid. And in fact, there were six clients, three couples, this was a wrongful discharge case, so they thought. And the complaint itself was filed before Mr. Skachel left Brandon. And Mr. Brandon's name is on the complaint, but he didn't sign it. And then there was an immediate filing of an amended complaint, which added some parties defended, and I think one plaintiff. Again, Mr. Skachel signed that amended complaint. Mr. Brandon's name was left blank. He took that case with him when he went into private practice. Immediately, it appears, he ran into difficulties filing responses to the motions to dismiss that the various either corporate or individual defendants filed. This case never got to issue. The Mound clients never got past filing an amended complaint. The defendants, not one, was required to answer. And the respondent says, well, all I did was miss a time by 2 days. On pages 8 and 9, I believe it is, of the report from the Board of Commissioners, we see Judge Rose, the district judge who had this case, write out in some detail the various failures of the respondent in the prosecution of this lawsuit. I appreciate the fact that we may confuse a holiday with a regular day, but this was placed in an entry. Mr. Skachel, what happened was he filed for a second extension after Judge Rose told him to file another amended complaint, and that date was November 25th, which in 2004 happened to be Thanksgiving. Judge Rose's office saw that that was Thanksgiving and gave him till the 24th, which apparently Mr. Skachel either didn't see, didn't read, or didn't take into account, and he filed it. But some point he realized it was due on the 24th.
Counsel, if I may.
Pardon me?
If I may, I think it's very unfortunate, and I think that's been litigated. What is the position of your client here today?
Thank you. I should have said that going in. I was going to, and I forgot. My apology. I do represent the Dayton Bar, and the Dayton Bar Association is asking this court to accept a recommendation of the Board of Commissioners on grievances and discipline and suspend John Skachel for a year with 6 months' state. Now, I noticed in our pleadings, as I was looking at this over the last couple of days, Mr. Williamson's request for mentor or monitoring or somebody to help Mr. Skachel. If this court wishes to add conditions to the recommended sanctions from the Board of Commissioners, the Dayton Bar does not oppose that, or would not oppose that in any way.
Counsel, let me also ask you, it sounds like Mr. Skachel was just over his head with these Mound clients. He couldn't manage a case of this magnitude, and Judge Rose, recognized that too, I believe.
I believe so.
And was he charged with accepting employment for which he was not suited, he was not competent? Was that part of it? And
yes, he was found to have acted in a non-competent fashion and to have neglected a matter
The non-competent was missing the deadline.
If that's to me, no.
No?
To me, his entire handling of the matter showed incompetence in handling of this matter. If I can see how you, Chief Justice, would read that as saying he missed the deadline by, quote, 2 days, and therefore that's not competent. I think that would be neglect, definitely neglect. I think his handling of the entire litigation was not done in a competent fashion.
Okay.
And the panel found and the board adopted the finding that Mr. Scaccia testified. In fact, we had two hearings on this, but we divided the hearings. The first one was on the Mound case. The second hearing was on Ms. Grider and Mr. Willis. So this panel had two opportunities to see and hear Mr. Scaccia in regard to all these matters. I appreciate that the respondent wants to make this just a bookkeeping case, that we didn't have records. Well, there were records. Dwight Brannon's office provided those records to Mr. Scaccia, including the amounts of money, I believe I stated this, that each of these clients had paid.
Is there restitution owing?
Pardon me?
Is there restitution owing to those clients in your view?
I believe the restitution is owing in the Mound case for all the clients. What he paid?
The representation I heard from Mr. Williamson was Mr. Scaccia doesn't have any records to figure out how much he should pay to each of those clients. Do you have records, or do you dispute that?
I would respectfully disagree with my friend, Mr. Williamson. Dwight Brannon's office provided Mr. Scaccia with a list of all the clients in the Mound case and the amounts of money that he paid,
Those records are available.
They're not only available, they're in evidence in this case. For example.
And other than those clients, is there other restitution owed in the view of your client?
I'm sorry?
Other than the Mound clients,
yes.
Is there other restitution owed to other clients in this case?
I believe one could argue very definitely that Ms. Grider is owed her $2,000. If you look at the contract that Mr. Scaccia had her sign, it's I get paid $2,000 whether we win or lose. If we win on a contingent fee and say, get a $100,000 judgment, I get $25,000 minus the two, but if we don't, I still get the $2,000. That was not really argued, wasn't, at the panel level, so I am not pursuing that.
Does the Dayton Bar Association have any provision to provide monitor or office assistance to people in Mr. Scaccia's position?
No. Not that I'm aware. But just follow through on this, on the restitution that Mr. Scaccia, quote unquote, provided. He not only provided 11 clients with $300, he provided Mr. Nofsinger with $1,500. And that's the amount of money that Mr. and Mrs. Nofsinger had paid. It's ironic, as my memory serves, and we don't have a record, so one of the people that Mr. Scaccia sent a check for $300 had been one of the clients who had not contributed one dime, to the expense fund. Not one dime.
Was the issue of restitution brought forth with the panel and the board, to your knowledge?
It was brought forth in the Mound situation to the panel. I don't know if it was pursued with the vigor that I wish I had pursued it.
Because the board report does not address the issue at all.
I agree, and I do not fault the panel for that. I might fault myself before I would do that. In regard to the Grider matter and the Willis matter, Mr. Scaccia says I was a young, quote unquote, in the practice, and therefore I should have, I think, some kind of special dispensation. Come November of this year, Mr. Skatia will have practiced for 30 years. When he left Brannon's office to go into private practice, he had been practicing almost 20 years. When he entertained or took the representation of Ms. Grider, that was in 2011, and Mr. Willis was in 2012. This is not a brand new lawyer, fresh out, that doesn't know his way around. Mr. Skatia had been continuously in the Dayton community from 1984, when he became an assistant Dayton City prosecutor. He had many resources in the sense of other lawyers. We're a very open and friendly bar, as I'm sure you all know. He, to my knowledge, and it was never presented in evidence of this case, ever tried to find out from any practicing lawyer in town, what do I do here? What do I do here? And one wonders what one needs to be taught about how to handle their trust account. Your trust account, I would think that every brand new lawyer, when the day they're sworn in, knows that trust is for clients' money.
Counsel, would you address the point of contention here, which is the appropriateness of the sanction? I think we all know what happened here and the shortcomings of the lawyer. Let's talk about the sanction with what time you have left.
We believe the sanction, let me back up. At the first hearing, I was asked what the Dayton Bar requested, and we said that the Dayton Bar was requesting a 2-year suspension. I had my reasons for that, but it doesn't matter.
An actual suspension was your first request?
Yes.
All right.
Then when we had our second hearing, and as I asked for this identical same thing, because we lumped all, in essence, the three cases together. So what I asked the panel, and obviously that was communicated to the board because it's in their report, that I had asked for a 2-year actual suspension. They gave us a year, 6-month stay. I did not file objections to that, as you all know, and that was after consultation with my co-counsel, who is unfortunately not here, and as well as members of the Bar Association. We will stand on that, and we hope that this court institutes that. I hope I answered your question.
Thank you.
If there aren't any other questions, then I'll sit down.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The only other thing I'd want to mention is that there was also recognized by the board character evidence in the guise of the testimony by Judge John Pickrell, who I would like to take the opportunity to say is now the most longest tenured judge in the Dayton Municipal Court, who drove from Dayton to Columbus. This was a judge who knew Mr. Skatia during his time in the city, also knew him as a private practicing attorney before him, and gave testimony in his favor as far as strong evidence of character.
So. I understand that, but we also have before us the writings of Federal Judge Rose in this matter, and they're pretty scathing as far as your client's performance with regard to this case. It was described as tortured, an insult to the dignity of the court. Your client couldn't follow directives from the federal judge. He was warned repeatedly. It sounds to me like your client couldn't have done more wrong on this case if he had tried intentionally.
Your Honor, you said it before. I think Judge Rose recognized that this case that started with Mr. Brannon's office in an established law firm that handles these kind of cases, and then Mr. Skatia then...
But this has nothing to do with the financial irregularities. What Judge Rose is talking about is the egregious performance by an attorney in representing clients in a case.
And my suggestion to you, Your Honor, is that that was part and parcel of taking this large, complex case from having co-counsel in an established law firm and taking it out on your own as a solo practitioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, we'll take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.